Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I am Ethan. Today's menu is all about cosmology, the structure of the universe. How does it work? Planes, black holes, stars,
gods. Yeah,
just if maybe gods.
This is a really broad
maybe just
topic.
Great old ones. Maybe just, you know, yeah. Spaghetti monsters, man.
With cosmology, it is similar to creation myths. This is just big, and It can be anything. It could be well defined. It could be ill defined. Anything in between.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big topic, mm-hmm. which thus means we're gonna keep it short.
Yeah, it's going quick, but I'm very excited about it because it's the type of thing. When I'm looking at a new world like D&D, I think it's fun getting into the weeds. I'm one of those types of nerds. I like reading about particle physics and string theory and how does our universe work, and then trying to think about how to make it work for other different ways. It's like eating chocolate chip cookies for dinner all the time. You can't do it too much because it doesn't actually help with the storytelling necessarily, but it is just fun.
In the real world, those all types of understandings of cosmology and history of the Greek pantheon and the Egyptian pantheon and the great wheel and the big tree or whatever they're called.
Yggdrasil. In D&D, there have been, in the D&D Forgotten Realms, where there have been three. There's like, it's like the world axis cosmology, the world tree drawn from Norse Yggdrasil. That's the structure of their universe. The great wheel is another big one. In Greek myths, it was the history, the pantheon was tied up in the history of it, because first it was chaos, and then chaos bore Erebus and Thanatos and that stuff. Even in biblical cosmology, the world started with primordial chaos, and then God structured it, and then when he flooded the earth and Noah and the ark, as it's debated, was it actual rain or did God release the tides of primordial chaos or the waters of primordial chaos back into the world? It's all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Titans versus gods is always a strange concept from like a cosmology perspective, where they're like, I think it's more mythology, but but it's like, why are there were beings that ruled the universe before the beings that ruled it now? Interesting that they're powerful enough to be overthrown, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Ethan, give me your description of your cosmology you've come prepared with.
Planets, not planes.
Cool.
What have you got?
The mirror.
Tell me about this mirror, Kyle.
It's pretty simple, and I was coming at it much more from a perspective of how do the people of the world view a thing, and this could be true, this could not be true, we can play with it.
Sure.
The idea of the mirror, which is that everything that's happening in our world is just a mirror image of something that's happening somewhere else, and thus we have no control over it, and we are like nihilistically going through the motions of an action that's being done by a god or by a creature in another world and another plane of existence, and people fully believing this to be true. That's kind of it.
Like we're being puppeted?
We're not puppeted. We are the mirror image of a thing that's already happened a few seconds earlier in another world.
Oh.
So it's like this, everything that's happening, like the free will isn't necessarily a thing. You are the image of something that's happening somewhere else. You could inverse it and say that the world, you know, the universe is a mirror, and we are the agent that actually institutes that. So the whole, like the cosmology is a mirror of what we're doing. And this idea that there's like, there are people who, you know, like the universe is a reflection of the world that we live in.
Huh.
Or vice versa.
Right. And you're not sure what kind of chicken and the egg type of thing.
Kind
of,
yeah.
And interesting questions about free will there.
Yeah.
Really interesting questions.
And then how does that play out over a society's long run? And that's why I was like, they're super nihilistic. They're super hedonistic. They just kind of like, because they are doing the most selfish, bottom of the barrel things, because they assume that they have no control, so they can't make a better world. So they might as well, like, they move into pleasure and to like just enjoying themselves more,
right?
Because they don't quite understand that they actually might have control over the world. They don't know, because it could be that the mirror does exist, but they think they're the mirror image and not the agent,
right?
So they are doing the stupidest, dumbest things possible because they assume that they don't have free will and they're just doing what's being told. They're being told to, but actually, in fact, they're making the entire universe a reflection of that because they don't, they misattributed where they were.
Right. even still, though, I can imagine a group of people using the mirror as a very powerful tool for legitimizing. Like, they're in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Dennis says in one episode, he's like, self-care, right? Isn't that what people say whenever they need an excuse to do whatever the fuck they want?
Yeah.
But in this case, you could make it altruistic. If you actually assume that you're the primary, you could say, I'm going to live well so that my reflection lives well. I have to. It's an altruistic thing. I'm not doing this for me. It's self, like, I'm saying this as a legitimizing thing to do, right? Like,
well, and I'm not sure if it's specifically that it's a mirror image of you precisely, or if it's, it could be that you might think it's a mirror image of you, but it's actually like a much more nebulous, like, chaos that you are, like, if you are living well, you're creating a more orderly space that actually allows for life to blossom and exist there, as opposed to being purely like a chaotic nether where nothing can happen at all. If you aren't living, you know, I don't know, like, but it could just also be that there's literally, there's the shadow Ethan, which is actually like a Jungian psychology idea of like the shadow, but, you know, like, you could be that there is a secondary Ethan that you are indeed trying to make sure lives better. I don't know, like, it could be either one. I don't really care.
You could also, it could be an interesting way, and I'm not saying this as setting this into the physical reality of the world, but just having people believe this to be true, where they think their mirror is more like we wouldn't, the analogy in our world would be the picture of Dorian Gray, where anytime they are living well, they think it, you could build in a guilt, oh my God.
Complex?
Thank you. You could build in a guilt complex where they think, I'm feeling well, oh my God, this is terrible, because now to keep cosmic balance, my mirror has to live poorly. Like, all the bad things that should have been happening to me are now happening to my mirror. But vice versa, if you suddenly go through a rough patch, you can assume that your mirror is doing well.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's all about, like, it's not, I'm not saying it's about cosmic balance, but just reflections of each other, right?
I think that's really interesting. I think that might be my favorite version, is that what if it is, there are two, it is a full mirror image, two worlds that are identical in most ways, and both are real, and both have free will, and both influence the other one, but they constantly are questioning, do I have free will or do I not?
Right.
And they might be doing, they might be in a, like, a weird cycle of being angry at their mirror image for fucking up their life,
right,
and not taking ownership for it, and then kind of shaming their mirror image for saying, look what I'm doing for you, you selfish piece of shit,
like, right,
I'm doing well for you,
right, and I don't want to be doing this,
yeah,
like, I have to do this for you. That's you could build a religion around it very easily.
Yeah, you get into a lot of religion, like, because at the core, this is a superhuman approach to it. Of like, I was coming at it directly from how humans perceive this,
right,
and like almost the religion perspective, and not necessarily like this is the matter of fact version of the world. But I think making it where it is, leaning more into that, this is how the like a religion cropping up and people behaving in a way because the cosmology is this way that is weird and hard for them to fully understand, and is constantly questioning that which makes us human.
I love that. I think it takes these questions, these big questions, what is my purpose, free will, right, the existential questions, and really sort of personifies them. Again, like you said, Shadow Kyle, Jungian archetypes sought to do the same. This does it in a metaphysical way.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I really dig that.
Yeah.
I think that's very interesting. That's very fun.
Yeah. Well, that's the end of that idea. It's nice. Pretty simple.
I dig it.
All right. What is your idea?
I describe mine as planets, not planes. Caveat heading into this exists for the sake of argument and just concrete in a D&D world. Before this episode, Kyle and I were talking about the importance of setting lore, you know, setting character player mechanics into an actual world or setting. To try and divorce the two makes no sense. And so as I was thinking about that, I've been thinking about this for a while now. I realized that looking at the planes, and, you know, there's the plane of fire and the astral plane and the inner planes and the outer planes. I was like, I'm sort of losing the thread here. Like, how are we, is this a multiverse thing? I'm kind of burnt out on the multiverse thing. Just Marvel's did it so dirty and so poorly. Everything Everywhere All at Once is, I think, the best depiction of a multiverse that we've seen in film. But so this is a bit in reaction to that. So instead of getting lost in the muckety muck of all the different planes,
muckety muck,
this is a distinct, a very clear universe. Mm-hmm. This is not a multiverse. There are no alternative planes.
One singular universe.
Every plane that we've talked about in the D&D, you know, cosmology, the world tree, the great wheel, whichever one you're going for, instead is now a planet.
Okay. So you just go to a planet of fire.
You have a Mustafar type planet. So instead of the nine hells, you have the nine rings, which is like a Mustafar type planet surrounded by nine rings that are all populated by different peoples of fire. I had the idea.
I think the planet should be a gas giant. So you can't. No one's actually on the planet. They're all on the rings.
Yeah. No, they're all on the rings. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
people can be on Mustafar.
And the gas giant, the planet, is called Tief, T-I-E-F, because then you get tieflings.
Oh, okay.
And that's the name for the creature. You have, instead of the Feywild, you have the wild planet Fey.
Okay.
And in here, in this world, again, been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate 3, I realize, I think that the Gith lore, the lore of the Gith Yonki and the Gith Sarai, would actually be way better. They're space elves. So yeah. I got rid, in this world, of all the elves. There are no wood elves. There are no drow. There's no nothing. It's the Gith and the Gith Sarai, but they're called elves. Okay. And that is how they work. And so it's you can blend with it, you can play with it. But on that world, that might be still where you have you still have the two different tribes. You have the militant pirate tribe of elves, and you have the more scholarly magic or science oriented side of elves. Right. I started thinking about, you have a water planet. That's where all your sea, your in terms of stat blocks. Right. That's where you have all your sea elves, your Tritons, your Merfolk, your Koatoa, that's where they all come from.
Yeah.
I think my favorite, though, I got stuck trying to figure out what the hell to do with Eir Gynasi, because I wanted to put them on a planet with, like, Aulin and Aarakocra and et cetera, et cetera. Moved away from that, decided to have an animal planet where all the bird people live with all the cat people and the dog people and the minotaurs and all the animal people live on one planet. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that Eir Gynasi and Asimar come from the same planet, but Asimar are just incredibly rare. They're incredibly, incredibly rare. No one really knows explicitly why they're so rare, why they're so different than Eir Gynasi, but they share a common heritage. Q jokes about, you know, are you an angel? You know, I've heard the deep sea traders talking about them. They come from the moons of Iago, I think.
Iago?
Phantom Menace? Anakin talking to Padme.
You can't make an obscure reference.
That's not obscure. It's the first line that the main character in the...
Yeah, in a movie that nobody likes.
We'll get into that in another episode. But yeah, so this is where you get planets, not planes.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking through, like, playing around with all the different creatures and all that stuff. And it's been a really fun exercise.
This is the most Ethan thing you could have done. Noting this is a pure D&D idea. This has no application anywhere else.
You could take it, but it's I think for it's just
when you
fun.
When you get into Eir Gynasi specifically, you're like, you're definitely, you win deep on D&D.
Oh yeah.
I think this is interesting because the whole time I'm just like, yeah, but then there's not the cross contamination you get in like the interplanar stuff where they're all kind of like stacked on top of each other. See, this is a sci-fi universe. Mm-hmm. This is D&D and sci-fi. Mm-hmm. It's Planescape.
Are you surprised that I did a space magic thing?
No. But
do you know me?
So, like, I think this works well if you wanted to do full-on D&D shit, but you wanted to be full-on sci-fi,
yeah.
Not Planescape. You want actual sci-fi.
Yeah, it's like Sword and Planet. It's very 1980s. Like it's sort of what inspired Star Wars. It's Flash Gordon. very sword and planet.
Yeah. Which works, I guess. I don't have a lot to say on this. I think it's, and this is like why this episode is going to be so short, is it's like, these are mostly just like, yeah.
Yeah. It's
that,
just
that
cool.
exists it's, and moving on question mark, you know, yeah.
I like thinking through the implications of these things, like, you know, in the mirror world, what if that was the predominant idea, how would people react to it? In this world, right, how do you create new lore based on this idea? So for example, I think, and this is another idea I had, like dwarves, halflings, Dwergar, goblins, and gnomes,
all the shorties
all come from a planet with very high gravity.
Oh, I like that. That's cool.
And so that explains why, you know, so that's what I'm through
batteries low.
That's why I'm thinking, that's why I say it's just fun. This is why I said it's like having chocolate chip cookies for dinner. It's just fun to think through this. It has very little impact on story, but it's just fun to think through, right? You know, the teleport spell or the planar gate spell in D&D would change and become wormhole.
Yeah.
Because you're creating a wormhole, right?
I think your point about changing lore is pretty neat, and it would change the way that things interact, where, you know, you get rid of, I mean, you've gotten rid of elves entirely, but like you wouldn't have the dwarves versus elves dynamic that is
right,
like Tolkien's thing. You know, you wouldn't have that anymore. You wouldn't have the, like, any real, like, you wouldn't have the blood war. You know, you wouldn't have, like, the hells are on a different planet. They don't deal with the demons.
Right.
So what does that even look like? Is, you know, like, they're just scheming amongst themselves. You kind of change fundamental parts of what makes D&D lore, because there's the disconnect and not the historical interaction between these things.
Right.
Or maybe there is, but you get to make
it up yourself.
You get to explain it in a different way.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how do you play around with that? How do you have fun? I think that's all. It's always fun to take what you've got. It's like reorganizing a room. You're not buying new furniture. You're not moving to a new apartment. You're just reorganizing, and it can give
new life
to the space.
New feng shui.
And I love doing that kind of shit. And I thought this was a really fun exercise.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
No.
Cool.
So that's it.
This is the shortest episode I think we've done so far.
Yeah, absolutely. A microwave idea, Kyle. Ding, Kyle.
Well, this is also like the least formal episode. We're just like, fuck it. My frozen lasagna is an ever-moving cosmology that there is no clarity, because, you know, at one point it is this plane and this plane, and then at another point there's no planes, and then those planes are merged, and it's just kind of ever-moving tapestry. Like, you look up at the stars, but the stars are never consistent. And the star, and like representing the cosmology of the people of the
world.
It's
like a three-body problem.
I haven't read or seen the show yet.
Ah, it's basically,
I know it's complicated as fuck.
It's complicated as fuck. Basically, it means if you are in the midst of three stellar bodies of equal gravitational strength, then you're in constant chaos, basically. There is no way to form stability. And this is like a planar version of that.
Yeah, and what a rude interruption of my frozen lasagna. You son of a bitch. This lasagna got burnt.
No, it's great.
You interrupted it. There's no questions.
Oh, shit. I did interrupt. I've ruined it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not sorry.
You broke the one rule. Anyway, so, yeah, it's like
a
bit of a constant chaos where the cosmology is changing, the universe is changing, they don't understand, and like they live with that, like, and they're just like, oh well, we can't actually rely on this, so we just kind of become atheists, we become nihilistic, because we're just like, we don't really know what to do.
Yeah,
like the universe can't explain anything, so we just don't explain nothing, we just live day by day and just don't even look up.
Yeah.
All right, what do you got?
Ding. The every star in our world is actually a gateway into another. This is a bi-dimensional, bi-planar universe where there is the plane of light and the plane of dark. We, in our normal world, such as it is now, this is actually the plane of darkness, because light shines down on us from the plane of light. So every star that you see is actually like a pinprick in reality into another plane. where things are just normally naturally very, very bright. And yeah. Same with the sun. That's how we get our energy. If you were to go to the plane of light, though, it would be a bright sky with little dark spots scattered throughout.
Oh, interesting.
And so you'd still have night and day because planetary physics wouldn't change necessarily. But for us, it would be the dark, you know, the night comes because you're moving.
Nightman cometh.
Because you're moving towards into the space of the great tear, right? Where all of the light goes and bleeds into our universe.
This is well over a minute.
Is it?
Yeah. You've really forgotten how to do frozen lasagna
today.
I forgot
how to do frozen lasagna.
This is twice today. You broke the two rules we have. You have 1 minute and you don't question the other idea. And you did both. I think I have to kick you from the podcast.
No, you don't.
Okay, fine. Yeah. I won't kick you from the podcast.
Yeah, so the world of light and dark.
I think it's cool.
Of light and dark.
It's cool.
But what stuck for you? Moving. Speed round, Kyle. Speed round. Let's go.
No, we could. All right, what stuck for me? I think what you were just saying was cool. I kind of forgot to cut you off because I was like, oh, this is interesting. I'm kind of being messed around. I was like, no shit, this is well over a minute. I think that was cool. I think...
I was thinking about Giedi Prime and the Dune 2 where they have the black sun and
yeah.
They did the ultraviolet thing. I was like, that would be, if there was a universe like that, that'd be cool.
Yeah, that might actually be what stuck for me. Like that. I think. Especially like you evoking Giedi Prime right now. Like, where it's like, yeah, I like that.
That was cool. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's what stuck for me.
Nice.
All right, so what stuck for you?
I think I'm going to keep playing around with the D&D planets, not planes idea. I really like putting a fresh coat of things just by reorganizing. It gets you to create new lore. It's fun to think through. You know, it makes you look at what's familiar and see it as brand new.
Yeah.
Give it a fresh coat of paint, make it feel less stale, air it out.
Yeah.
Insert expression after expression after expression.
Yeah. I mean, clearly you were having a blast doing it. So
it's really, really fun.
That's what will stick, you know, from in most people's minds. It's like, what did I have the most fun playing around with?
Yeah.
And yeah, makes sense.
And you can separate it from the D&D stuff too and just make it be like, hey,
because you can just do it with any cosmology. Just take any cosmology, break it apart and make it a different formulation, mm-hmm. but the same principle, same
Absolutely.
Concept, same whatever. You know, the world tree now becomes the world roots and you're like, okay,
great.
Let's go the other way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And now it's all roots because the old world, which was the tree, got cut down.
Well, there you go. Boom.
And suddenly you're in a whole new world.
All right. But yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, awesome. That's what stuck for us. Let us know what stuck for you. Email's in the show notes. If you like incredibly short episodes, let us know that.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.